Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Project Destiny, Biotech Wars, by Justin Sloan, narrated by Adam Werner. Chapter 1. Subsection Alpha, Outer Halls. None of the red dots on Stealth's HUD would be alive in a few minutes, so he had no reason to worry. No, it wasn't worry that crept up on him, sending the taste of bile into the back of his throat and a building tension in his chest. What then, he wondered as he lifted his rifle and prepared to breach subsection Alpha of Space Station Horus's living quarters. This was a known hangout for the lowlifes of this place, and rumored hiding spot of the hacker group that called themselves the Looking Glass, his target. This wasn't Stealth's first mission, so the reaction his body was having to it didn't make sense. A glance at Red showed that the man was ready, breaching charge in place and hand up. He stared back through his faceplate, full to protect against explosions. It reminded Stealth of a bug, with its built-in air filter in case of gas attacks, and the small antennae-like horns on the top and rear, similar to the helmets they'd worn in their Marine Corps days. Stealth did his best to push the unsettling feeling down, focusing instead on a memory of his training in the Marines before coming here. A drill instructor back on Earth, standing before him in his body armor of green and black, shouting at him to do just one more push-up, then another, just one more, and it went on and on. Repetition, something familiar, order to the chaos. That memory always calmed his nerves, though he was certain it had been the source of an opposite reaction at the time. Since it was one of his few remaining memories, he clung to it like a dog with its favorite chew toy, which happened to be another snippet of a remaining memory, the one he relied on far less often. Here on Space Station Horus, he was part of something bigger, part of something new. He and Red were elite soldiers in Project Destiny, a special team within the privatized military that controlled the space stations. Being part of this team meant they had special equipment, special biological enhancements, and special privileges. However, it also meant that his team was the target of the Looking Glass, which made the terrorist hacker organization their main enemy. If Alice or any of the other top marks were here, he was sure as hell going to take them down.
You with me?
Red's voice came across their private comms, a direct channel just for him, as if he needed that now too, babying.
Breach! Are you?
Just breach already! Stealth readjusted his shoulder rifle, securing it in place against the section of his exoskeleton that allowed for maximum mobility while adjusting for kickback. Red shrugged, triggered the breaching charge, and rolled back against the wall out of the way. 3, 2, 1.
Kaboom!
The door blew off its hinges, showering debris inward. A cloud of dust rose up around the two soldiers as they entered. Oddly, the HUD screen showed more red dots than could be possible. Hundreds of the enemy in here, all armed to the teeth. So much that it was obscuring his vision. One of the problems with these damn devices. Red was already shooting, but Stealth took the time to turn off his display. Instead of a room full of enemy targets, all he saw was his partner. The cloud of dust and three people huddled in the corner. Movement flashed, and he registered a fourth person who came swinging in from his right. At least he hadn't been wrong about something feeling off with the mission, he thought as the large technician plowed into him. Thanks to the exosuit and its enhanced abilities, he resisted the attack, but the hit did cause him to drop his rifle. One man was down, and Red was moving on another, shots ringing out. Then a hand was reaching for Stealth's rifle. Still wrapped in combat with the first attacker, Stealth let his training and enhanced speed and strength take over. When the man pulled back for a punch, Stealth moved to the outside of it, caught the incoming arm, and twisted it around before kicking out the man's knee with a loud pop. The hand was on his rifle now, so he slammed his attacker into the nearby wall head first and spun to get his weapon back. But the hand belonged to a young teenage girl. She had the rifle, but was unsuccessfully trying to lift it. Without the genetic enhancements of PD, that would be tough. Tears in her eyes, she was staring at the now unconscious man on the floor.
"The hell did you do to my dad?" she yelled,
then pulled the trigger even without the gun fully raised. A 4-round burst shot out, 3 rounds planting in the floor and 1 going on to ricochet around the room and off Red's body armor. Red turned to fire on her in retaliation, but Stealth leaped, knocking him sideways. As soon as he'd recovered, he turned back to the girl, reached her in 2 strides, and snatched away the Destiny's Destroyer Assault Rifle, DD-4, as they called it. "Cease fire!" he shouted to Red, then pulled up the comms in his helmet. "Stand down, all teams, stand down. We've been had."
"Negative on that," Captain Leghorn's scratchy voice replied. "All teams, prepare for new assignments."
"What the hell's going on?"
"Sergeant, you were not given authorization to shut down your helmet during combat,"
the captain replied, reminding Stealth why he disliked the man so.
"Luckily for us, Red follows orders. Even more luckily for us, everything's going to plan. Now, stand by for orders."
Stealth looked back at the girl, kneeling beside her father now. He was awake, at least, which was more than could be said for the worker Red had put a bullet in.
Damn it, what kind of horror storm was this? "New coordinates incoming," the captain said. "Proceed."
"Roger that," Red said, having recovered and now glaring at Stealth with his mask raised. Cutting off comms, he added, "Stick to the program, hotshot."
Then slammed his mask back on and headed for the far door. They moved through the door and into the next corridor, an empty hallway with eerie yellow lights flashing overhead. Metal beams ran across the side of the walls, with empty patches revealing the hallways on each side. Likely under construction, and just as likely to never be fully completed, as was the case with much of this station. Money was better used for military expansion and defenses, even if extraterrestrial life hadn't actually been discovered yet. And since Earth had begun diverting large amounts of its resources into terraforming, the space stations weren't receiving subsidies anymore. It was easy to understand why the people were fighting back, angered by their low wages and cutbacks on rations to the lower crust.
"What are we doing here, Red?"
Stealth hissed over their private channel.
"They said to get in, hit the target, and get out."
"Remembering that I'm not the target, right?" Red replied, ignoring the question. "Just want to make sure."
"Damn it, you saw that girl back there. You were just going to shoot her, too?"
"I get the job done," Red growled. "Some teenager chick has my partner's rifle. I take her out. Man up, bro."
The words irked Stealth to a whole new level, but as he was about to respond, a new direction showed up on his screen. They turned, the captain starting to shout at them through their comms that they were going the wrong way, and then,
kaboom!
As the floor disappeared beneath them, Stealth found himself reaching, arms flailing as he dropped his rifle and tried to catch hold of something, anything. He was falling, darkness consuming him. Then another explosion went off, and he was vaguely aware of Red's helmet flying past above. Helmet, maybe? In the flash, he realized that there might have been more than helmet there. No torso, but more than helmet. The floor below slammed into him with a shock that shot through even the exoskeleton-reinforced body armor. He froze there, back arched and chest feeling like it would explode. Shooting pain held him in place, coursing through his limbs and wanting to fly out with a yell of agony. But he gritted his teeth and refused to give them that satisfaction. Whoever had done this to him and his partner had just made a horrible mistake. He would heal. He would find them. He would take them down without mercy. But first, he had to get out of there before more attacks came.
With a growl, he staggered to his feet, noting that the exoskeleton was bent and his shoulder dislocated. He positioned himself against the wall and threw his shoulder into it, screaming now, unable to help it. A glance around showed no sign of attackers, so he took another moment to disconnect the exoskeleton on his upper right side, where the dent and injury were. A buzzing was coming from his helmet, so he hit it with the palm of his gloved hand. His ears rang, and then a moment later he heard someone shouting for him in Red. "Stealth here," he replied. "Red is down." A brief silence followed, during which Stealth started to back away down one of the dark chambers. Whatever came next, he certainly wasn't going to be found sitting around waiting.
"Stealth, is that you?"
Captain Leghorn's voice came in over the comms.
"Yes, sir."
"Get the job done, and we'll get you out of there,"
Captain Leghorn commanded.
"Stick with the plan, soldier."
Soldier. Huh. As much as that was true now, his being a part of Project Destiny, he knew in his heart where he belonged. This feeling of unease and suspicion had never been with him back on Earth, back when he was with the Marines. He didn't remember a whole lot from those days, but he remembered that much.
"I'm a Marine, damn it,"
Stealth replied, turning to abandon his mission and return to the command room. He meant to find out just what the hell was going on here. While he was at it, he would see that Captain Leghorn got a piece of his mind. Chapter 2. Subsection Alpha, Hidden Chambers. Fist in the air, Alice spun in her chair with a shallow smile. The smile for her team, but not coming from her heart. She never enjoyed hurting the individuals who'd come up through Project Destiny, PD, but she celebrated it for her team. The individuals weren't the ones pulling the strings, but the looking glass had to hit them where they could. Soon they'd hit them where it hurt, making a run on PD headquarters. As if the name weren't bad enough, with its promise of something greater, something more than what they were. Now the project had opened its doors to new recruits, bringing men and women off the streets in droves to get enhancements and serve as the eyes and ears of the corporations that ran the space stations. They would become part of PD, though not its elite soldiers, not the group she had hit tonight.
"Lured them in like the rats they are," her teammate Scorpio said.
The guy was tall but lean, and had earned his name for a fascination with the constellations and a love of martial arts. That axe kick of his had once broken the PD soldier's helmet in two. As if he needed more reason for the nickname to stick, the left side of his face had been marked by the enemy when they had captured him once. He now sported the branding of a scorpion with pride, though it meant he was confined to Operations HQ, as he'd be made too easily in public. Not all of the others were here, but Scorpio was always in the inner circle. Swinger and Norwal had their stations up behind them, wide grins staring back at Alice. To her left sat Intrepid, eyes still glued on his display as he checked for any lingering issues. The man insisted they call this place the Skiff, so he could feel like he was on the right side of it all. Skiff for Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility, which he and the other mishmash of signals intelligence and red team Marines had worked out of just outside of DC. Essentially, the same sort of work New Origins had Alice and her civilian counterparts doing as contractors back on Earth. New Origins was one of the top corporations in charge of searching for extraterrestrial signals, while humans built up their space stations and worked to terraform Titan, Mars, and other planetary objects. Now the corporation was just one more of her enemies, since they had bought the rights to Project Destiny. Their procurement meant they led both the terraforming via its external branch and the privatized military that was in charge of security on the space stations. Intrepid had been in the Marines with Alice's husband back on Earth, the two of them moving up here when he and Marek were stationed with the Project Destiny folks. She still remembered the smile on Marek's face when he told her he'd been accepted, that he would be on the cutting edge of space exploration once he proved himself. That was the story, anyway. Project Destiny would train their soldiers, make them the best with new equipment unlike anything the Earth military could get their hands on. Little did they know at the time what that actually meant. The promise he was signing up for, though, was a promise of bigger and better. Humanity's destiny, it was said, would be led by the PD soldiers. When and if they found alien life, Marek would be among the first to know, the first to get a chance to fly out. It was terrifying and thrilling. "Just 1 month, Bunny," he'd said, forehead pressed against hers, breath warm and sweet. "They said they have some tests, that they need us to go first, and then they'll get you a transfer." While it was his dream, she couldn't deny her curiosity. She loved the idea of being part of it all. From the messages she'd seen out there as part of her job with NSA's own red team, it was getting close, too. Somebody up there believed in a discovery on Mars, though they were being cryptic, beyond the norm on this one. Part of her had to get up there to learn more. Then that day finally arrived, when the car was supposed to take her to the launch site to join him. She had missed Marek more than she could have imagined over that month. The space elevators Japan had nearly perfected traveled quickly, but nothing could be fast enough as far as she was concerned. As she'd finished packing, she vowed to never be separated from him for that long again. Little did she know, she was about to be told that separation was going to be forever. The car came, but it wasn't a driver that approached her door. It was the man and woman from New Origins, bringing news of his death. That same week, she'd learned that Intrepid had gone AWOL, a fact that confirmed what she had already been feeling, that something was off. She'd been trained to read between the lines, and there was a whole lot going on here between some squiggly-as-hell lines. After that, she had diverted the focus of her team at New Origins. She'd gone rogue and had to answer for it, but being fired was the best thing that ever happened to her. A new look, a new identity, and secret travel up to the space station. Then the formation of the Looking Glass. Today's hit had been their first real attack on New Origins. No more gathering intel. This war was moving forward full force. She had questions, and New Origins would give her answers or go down in flames. All but Intrepid were boasting about the roles they had played in luring the team into the trap. But the smiles and bragging rubbed Alice the wrong way. "We got one of them, maybe two with that explosion, but don't get cocky," Alice warned. "The minute we let hubris get the best of us, we fall to the wayside like the white rabbit did." Their expressions turned somber. They were all too familiar with what had happened to her last team. A former PD soldier named Gretchen had joined the ranks and gotten ahead of herself, trying to take over the team and make a move that would have led to at least one general's death. She started calling herself Teach and lighting her hair on fire. While an obvious sign that the woman was mentally unstable, at least to Alice, it worked to rally the weak-minded members of the team. That same team mutinied against Alice and went with Teach, then overextended themselves, got greedy, and in the end got themselves killed. Part of her had always wondered if it had been a trap to begin with, if Teach had been a plant, and the whole idea to lead them on a suicide mission. Hence the post-mortem name of the White Rabbit, a reminder for her and her team to never go down that hole. It didn't matter now. She'd learned her lesson, better vetting her recruits and keeping a strict hierarchy of power. More often than not, however, she preferred to work alone. Tonight, that had been impossible. She'd had to rely on Scorpio, one of the few survivors from back then, the only one who had stayed true to her, and had been captured because she'd asked him to pretend to be in with Teach. She owed him one for that, and therefore always ensured he was in the know. Swinger turned his wide, starkly wide eyes to her, cocking an eyebrow. "Your move, boss. They're going to be scrambling.
Right. She turned back to her station and started working her magic. It helped that she had once been in charge of setting up the firewalls she was now tearing down. She knew her way inside the systems, and knew the other men and women prepping defenses the way they thought. The right moves, and they'd never see her coming. For at least an hour, she went through the steps she guessed might work, finding barriers and then backtracking to find new ways in, potential backdoors or failure points. The fatal flaw often led back to some programmer who had been too damn lazy to check with security, a peon who was told to just get the damn program working. Higher-ups were, more often than not, more concerned with the bottom line than with ensuring security measures were in place. And she was using that to her advantage, loving, for once, that private companies put more stock into fast money than did their government counterparts. "Got it," she said finally, pulling up a screen that showed various communications and contact information. "Next move of theirs is an arrival at the docks from Earth. If we let them believe we'll hit them hard there, they might leave PD headquarters at much less guarded. Just have to find out when." Scorpio nodded, then added, "Break the chain while it's hot." "Damn straight." Norwal stood, going for the small fridge they kept in the corner and pulling out a bottle of homemade ale. Her favorite, though Alice found the stuff to be rancid. "Work hard, play hard," Norwal added, giving Swinger a playful wink. "Keep it PG," Alice said, standing and heading for the door. "I'm going to hit the head. Then I'll need to analyze the findings with Scorpio. Do what you gotta do to unwind, but be ready." "And get a damn room, you two," Scorpio said with a laugh as he stood to join her. He pretended not to look as Norwal handed the drink to Swinger and straddled one of his thick thighs. The two weren't really a thing per se, but when it came to playing hard, they were often playing more with each other than the team. "You're always welcome to join us," Swinger said, proving as was never necessary where he got his nickname. "Keep dreaming," Scorpio replied with a sideways glance toward Alice, which she pretended not to see. Even if her husband was dead, the love she felt for him wasn't. It never would be, and she had every intention of finding out what had actually happened to him. Could she move on and try to live without him? Maybe. But she didn't want to. Not until she had the answers that New Origins and Project Destiny weren't giving her. Another glance back showed Swinger whispering into Norwal's ear, the younger woman giggling, fingers playing with his earlobe. A small gesture, one Alice normally would have ignored, if it hadn't been for the memory that little gesture called forth. Marek had often touched her like that, hand moving through her hair, down her cheeks, fingers caressing her earlobe as he stared at her with love and admiration. She remembered one morning when the snow had just started to fall outside. She'd let him stay over because it had been so cold and icy the night before. The first night she'd said, okay. She'd woken up to him looking at her like that, caressing her earlobes like that. And when his lips had met hers, it had been the first time she'd realized she would spend the rest of her life with him. As far as she was concerned, he wouldn't have a say in the matter, she had thought with a giggle similar to Norwal's now. Somehow she doubted that was what was going through the woman's mind at the moment, but smiled at the thought all the same. Intrepid finally stood, grabbing the slim glass screen of his computer, and swiped his fingers across it so that it shrunk down to pocket size. He walked over and handed it to Scorpio with a grunt, then nodded as he continued on past them. Scorpio hid it in the inner pocket of his old military jacket, calling after him, "No play for you either?" Intrepid answered with a finger. Scorpio had thick skin and was used to this, replying with a hearty laugh as he joined Alice at the doorway. "When are you going to start acting like a member of the team?" Alice asked. "Tell you what," Scorpio nodded toward Norwal and Swinger. "The day they act like adults, I'll shake their hands and give them a smile. Those two are like horny teens and intrepid.
Don't be shy now, he chuckled.
Well, we all know he's a dick.
The irony, Alice replied with a chuckle. But you can't tell me you wouldn't be like the other two if you had a woman or a man, he shrugged.
I've had my share of women. I like a taco as much as the next guy, but I ain't interested in licking no popsicles. To each their own. Just ain't my style.
Classy. And now?
Now we have a job to do, and I think it's best to stay focused.
The words left his mouth calmly enough, but Alice wasn't blind. She saw the look he gave her, the longing in his eyes. If she changed her stance on the subject, there was no doubting he would too. That wasn't about to happen, though, so she dropped it and led them on their way. They passed an opening where the hall led into a larger chamber, light falling down on them. The skiff was hidden in the inner workings of the space station, one of many secretly carved-out rooms in this subsection. As they continued along the corridor, several guards stood at their posts, pretending to be working on repairs if asked by outsiders. Alice greeted each of them with a nod, stopping to hand a few metal chips to an especially large one they called the Bull. They exited their hall to find the section with the head and another hall that led to their private chambers. Just remember why you're doing this, Alice told Scorpio.
Don't have to remind me, he said,
eyes finally abandoning that hard look he so often wore, turning to her with compassion.
We'll get those bastards, and we'll learn the truth.
Is there ever a moment when you, I don't know, wonder why we're doing it? He frowned.
I thought I just said the reason.
That's not what I mean. My conviction is as strong as any, but why? Why is it necessary?
What the hell kind of world do we live in where a corporation has this kind of power?
It didn't used to be like this.
And the new kids don't know the difference, Scorpio said, nodding. I remember a time.
Hold up. How old do you think you are? She laughed in spite of the gloom hanging over her. You can't be a day older than me, and I'm... Well, you don't need to know how old I am.
Pretty sure you don't have any secrets from me at this point. Point is, the why is because some piece of slime back on Earth approved it. That's why. If you give the politicians power, they're gonna abuse it, how it's always been.
Good. So you're in it for the long haul, he assessed her, then coughed.
Didn't you say you had to hit the head?
Yeah. She did feel herself starting to get a tad squirmy. Soon it would turn into a full-on dance. Pull what you can. We'll go over it in your room.
Roger that, he replied,
turning to the halls and going on his way. Others were filling the area now, either passing to their rooms or using this walkway as a shortcut to their jobs. It was one of the many that were considered off-limits, but nobody actually followed that. And since pissing off the entire population of a space station wasn't the best move on the part of the corporations that relied on them for a workforce, they hadn't made much of a fuss. Now that Alice's team had attacked the corporation, she wondered how long the status quo would last. Right now, though, she had to take the Niagara Falls of pisses. Making a beeline for the bathroom, she found herself a stall, and for the billionth time, wished to God they had bathrooms up here like she remembered from Earth. As a high-ranking civilian, she'd had access to the bathroom on the top floor of New Origins Earth Building. Plush couches, floor-to-ceiling mirrors, even warm towels and complimentary perfume. Here she had a metal bowl, a metal seat, and a plywood stall. Not the worst, but since importing toilet paper was a bitch, they had to rely on the station's recycling for that, and it was rough as fine sandpaper. All the technology in the galaxy, and they couldn't fix that. If her husband's supposed death wasn't grounds for going after them, the toilet paper might have been. She was about to stand when she heard two women gossiping about the hit on the PD forces. She lingered instead, as one mentioned the explosion and hacks surrounding it, and said something about a
sample complete. Ready to continue?